Next speaker is Doug Wysocki with NRCS Lincoln.
Thank you, Lee. Good afternoon. I'm glad that you've all been with us. It's getting late in the afternoon, so I'm going to talk loud to keep you awake. Okay, I'd like to acknowledge some colleagues that have worked with me on this project. I'm going to talk about the arsenic content and geochemistry of some carbonate-rich fens in South Dakota. Okay, our main goals here are to characterize some organic soils formed in carbonate-rich discharge, and I do mean discharge, these are permanent discharge wetlands, provide some baseline trace metal data for these unique wetlands, and then to elucidate the processes and functions these wetlands have on geochemical fate of these some key trace elements. To introduce you to the area a little bit, and this is important because geomorphic setting here controls the hydrology and it sets the stage for the particular geochemistry that drives this system. Eastern North South Dakota, that was a sop to my North Dakota colleague there, but regardless, is all glaciated. There's a central rib called the Prairie Coteau, and it's surrounded on two sides by the Des Moines Lobe and the James River Lobe, which are the youngest late Wisconsin glaciations in that part of the world. The central part is somewhat older in glaciation, and it's centralized by a disintegration moraine system, which you can see on this diagram. And I've here redlined in the Prairie Coteau, and you can see the central portion where there's a, if you're a good fisherman, this is a great area for fishermen because there's all these lakes. So if you want to retire, South Dakota is a good place to do it. All our samples, which are numbered here from one, starting from the south, working north into three counties, Jewell County, South Dakota, Roberts County, South Dakota, and then we sneaked over across the state line into to Minnesota, which is Yellow Medicine County. And if you know where all these wetlands occur, they're right on the margin of the Coteau, where the Des Moines Lobe is lapped up on top of it and pushed some younger materials against it. But the key driver here is the high water table, because there's about 500 to 1,000 feet of relief when you drop off the Coteau. So there's quite a bit of relief in this system. Right. The other key component is that all these tills have come down from what's the central portion of Canada. They come over Cretaceous shales and limestones. The Pear shale being one of the dominants of black shale. So you have carbonate-rich, shale-rich tills, and it's all ground up, and it also came over some former forest system, so you actually incorporated carbon into the system as well. This is what these wetlands look like. Here, we're coming down a slope, and you're walking down the slope, and all of a sudden, you start walking back up. So you're walking uphill into the wetland. The organics here have mounded up on the discharge site, so you're actually walking uphill into the wetland. This one is dominated by cattails. There's another one back here, and if you look around the system, there's a couple more on the landscape as well. You can go out there in less in more formidable temperatures, and there's still discharge. This is in January. The air temperature is about a minus 20 Fahrenheit. So, and there's still water flowing out of the system. It hasn't quite frozen yet. And that's, you know, that's usually a good summer day in North Dakota, but if we look at what these soils actually look like, they have a very prominent root mat and about the top 25 to 30 centimeters, and we sample them with a peat auger, in this case going down about 5.5 meters. The key thing about these soils is their discharge. And we can draw up a schematic of what we're looking at. A mounded up organic area, Most of these are stratigraphic or slope wetlands. Some are lake edge wetlands, and some are depression discharge sites. So they cross different hydrogeomorphic systems as well. But you have carbonate bearing, high shale content, and permanent discharge. So I call these yuppie soils, the young upward mobile soils. Everything's coming up and being precipitated in that soil because they are permanent discharge. Okay. Now we're going to look at some key things. Here, and these are total elemental digestions, here's the arsenic content from 76 samples, a high of 2,495 micrograms per kilogram. Okay. The mean is 284, the geometric mean is 90, the median is 74. Now to put this into perspective, the NRCS has a geochemical database where we've analyzed 8,500 samples. Okay. The mean of that is 10. The median is 5.3, and the former high was 895. Okay. Now before you decide, I'm never going in those wetlands again, because arsenic, of course, is a toxic element to human health. And we can look at some of the other metals. I'm not going to go into those, but you can see that there's quite a bit of manganese coming out of the system as well. Sister element to arsenic is selenium. It's also bound in the shales, and there are some high values of selenium as well, but it's not the same case as arsenic. The question becomes, what's binding, or where is this arsenic coming from, and is it toxic and being released out of this system? Okay. There's various things that can bind arsenic. The iron oxides, carbonates, organic matter are some of the key ones. So we regress, or did some Pearson correlations, and the only thing that the arsenic is related to is iron, phosphorus, which is very similar to chemically, and dithionite extractable iron, and then some correlation to silicon and aluminum here. But if you look at aluminum or silica separately, there's no correlation. And if you look at some of the other things, for example, carbon, organic carbon, sulfur, rub fiber content, which is a measure of decomposition, nothing else in this system is correlated to the arsenic. So that iron is what's binding or holding the arsenic. I shouldn't say binding yet. I'll show you, explain this in a minute. The other thing here is, and we're going to look at just a couple sites. And we're going to plot three materials, carbonate, organic matter, and then iron expressed as goethite, as a cumulative plot. Carbonate, organic matter, and iron. Those three constituents here on this site together make up 80 to 90% of that soil. And these are primarily organic soils. They're precipitating carbonate. They're precipitating iron. So this is a three-phase soil. Carbonate, organic matter, and iron. Look at another site. I'll point out a couple other things. Let me back up just one thing. Okay, we also did some radiocarbon dating. At this point, and there's two things we dated. There's the fine grain organics and the coarser grain organics, and you get a different date slightly, about 2,000 years apart. So the base of this soil was forming about 10,000 years ago, radiocarbon years before present. All this accumulated during the Holocene. So we're looking at Holocene accumulation. Another site we'll look at, the same thing, again, carbonate, organic matter, and iron. Notice this one fluctuates considerably. And what we think is going on here is you're getting a flush of surface water coming in rather than groundwater. Here, this one is a little bit younger. The age is here running down that profile, down to 4 meters, about 2,000 years at the base. So this is a very late Holocene. A couple key things about the system, okay? Arsenic, there are two primarily oxidation states. There's arsenate, which is oxidation state 5, and arsenite, which is the more mobile and the more toxic one. The stability diagram. Now, what I just want to point out here is they form oxyanions of various charge, depending on the EH, the PE, and the pH. But the important thing to note here is that the oxidation stability diagram overlaps with ferrihydrite, an iron mineral, non-semicrystalline iron mineral that forms from solution. So if we take and we graph several things, okay, let's look at here the total arsenic on this particular site. 10 to the 2 to 10 to the 3, so you're looking at somewhere between 200 to 2,000 parts per million of arsenic in that system. Notice that the parallel between the iron content and the arsenic content. They're very, very close. The other thing we'll look at is total P. It also mirrors the iron content. So it is a competitor for the same sites on the mineral surfaces. And then the other key thing here is you take and express the binding capacity of ferrihydrite. It's about 0.6 millimoles per gram of iron within ferrihydrite, regardless of the arsenic in solution. So that represents the minimum value that ferrihydrite can hold, regardless of concentration. And that's what I've graphed here. Soils have a very high capacity to grab and hold arsenic. We'll look at one other one. Same thing here. This one has a relatively low arsenic concentration, from 10 to about 100 parts per million. Here, the phosphorus content is much higher. There's the ferrihydrate min and the total iron content. I've also graphed here the total arsenic to iron ratio, and that gives you an idea how it's behaving in the system. Notice when there's loss of arsenic from the freshwater flushes that I showed you before, this ratio goes up because there's iron still coming in the system. So it's this oxidation reduction of the system that's controlling arsenic. And the source is the sulfides in the Western Provenance tills. These are hydrologically important. Redox control trace elements. Arsenic, iron, and manganese. The importance here to consider is that the EPA limit for baseline arsenic is 20 parts per million total. These soils have anywhere from 100 times that. And these are natural. They're all natural settings. There's no contamination whatsoever. The important point here is that regulatory trace mineral baseline values must consider form, fate, as well as the total content. We've not done any work to look at bioavailability up there, but we do know that iron is a strong binder. In fact, they use iron or apply iron oxides to soils at contaminated sites to bind iron, or to bind arsenic, excuse me. So with that,
thanks, Mike. It's time for one question, if we have one for you. Check.
Sorry, I have a question about the pH range, they're all carbonate-dominated systems. pH varies from 6.8 to 7.5. And it's in part because of the, you're degassing these, so they're on the lower end of the buffer capacity of carbonate, which would be about 8.2. But, and there's also the organics in here that add some acidity, so they're not quite at the 8.2 buffer, but they're very close.
Thanks.